This is the last shiur, you know, at the end of the Zman, and I just want to tell you just a word. It's actually Nogeya Tisha B'Av, and it's Nogeya the stuff that we're doing. And that is, you know, the Nitziv has a famous Hakdama in the Hamikdavor, where the Nitziv talks about the Maimer Chazal that the Beis Hamikdash, the Bayis Sheni, was Nechra because of Sinas Chinam. Right, it's a famous Chazal, and the Gemara says in Yuma that Sinas Chinam is worse than the Gimel Chamuras of Avayi Zergal Shri Chastamim, because the Gimel Chamuras there was only for 70 years, and the Chorban of Sinas Chinam is even today we still have a Chorban because of Sinas Chinam. So the Nitziv is going on the fact that Sefer Bereishis, Chumash Bereishis, is called Sefer HaYashor. And the Gemara says in Avodah Zarah, it's called Sefer HaYashor because it is the Sefer of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov that are called Yesharim L'makom. So he says, what's the notion of Yesharim versus Tzadikim? So Tzadikim is Bein Adam L'makom. The Musik of Yashor is Bein Adam L'chaveru. And the Nitziv says that Avram Avinu is godless, and really all of the Avos godless, they were nishtabeach because of the halichas, because of anhaga that they had with people. Even if the Avodah Zarah, the Nitziv says that Avraham Avinu deals with Sdaim, he's mispowel for Sdaim, all those in Yachim. So the Nitziv then goes on and says, and this is a little controversial, there's even a little bit of meisim attached to this, the Nitziv tainas that the sinas chinam of the Bayis Sheni was that people would look at other hashkafas within the Torah, and they would consider them to be minos and apikorsis, the Nitziv says. That you had different shitas, and sometimes there was a notion that if it wasn't exactly what my shita was, the person was a min, or a tzuki, or a kaifer. Of course, the problem is, there were min and tzukim and kaifer, but it isn't like a fictional thing. But the Nitziv says the label was misapplied, and the sinas chinam was a kind of from sinas chinam, in which if it wasn't punked my sheet in Torah, there was an apikorsis. Now, the Velt says that even though the Nitziv was describing the Bayis Sheni, the Velt says that the Nitziv was giving a bit of a teichacha to the Kanoim of his generation, vis-a-vis Torim Derech Eretz, vis-a-vis Zionism and the like, and the Nitziv was claiming that the harchaka that we have because of Kanos was considered to be a form of sinas chinam. The Velt also says, now this is an oral shmuah, so we don't have any proof for this, that the Chafetz Chaim, he did not send his son to Volozhin. They say it was a little bit of a technique, because he felt that the Nitziv was too accepting of things that were chutz l'machane. Who knows? It is true that Rav Aryeh, the Chafetz Chaim's son, didn't go to Volozhin, but we don't know. We don't have a particular reason. It is interesting that when the Chafetz Chaim wrote his Sefer Avas Chesed, it was a famous Sefer, and Shmir Soloshin is his, Lashon Hara are the most famous, but the Chafetz Chaim also wrote a Ke'ein, like a Shulchan Aruch of Gemilas Chesed. So the Nitziv did write a very, very long Haskama, and the Haskama is as big as a Hakdama, and the Nitziv actually reiterates in that Sefer the Hashkafa. So it's a little schwer to say the Chafetz Chaim was misnaget to the Hashkafa of the Nitziv in the Hakdama, because in the Haskama to Avas Chesed, the Nitziv reiterates, unless the Chafetz Chaim felt he couldn't take out, the Nitziv gave him the Haskama, he's not going to start taking out different stuff. But it's interesting that, we normally associate the Chafetz Chaim, right, as the paragon of kindness and chesed, which of course he was, but the emes is, in terms of Hashkafa, he was actually a kanoi. In fact, even Rav Meir Simcha, the Yer Sameach, had machlekes with the Chafetz Chaim, because, for example, the Chafetz Chaim was absolutely against a requirement that a Rav know Polish or Russian. He felt that was giving into Haskala. Rav Meir Simcha actually says a Rav should know, and this was such a big issue that at one point they stopped talking to each other. And there was a big machlokes anyway. If Mashiach would come, who would be the Kohen Gadol? Some say it was Rav Meir Simcha, some say the Chafetz Chaim. Yeah. Certainly you have two qualified candidates. So the Chafetz Chaim in Hashkafa was very, very kanoi. And that we can give an autobiographical reason, because when the Chafetz Chaim was a Yassim, he was almost gechapt by the Haskalah, so to speak. So the Chafetz Chaim saw in his own life the shreklecha, the tremendous sakana of the idea of modernization and askala, because he was mamish, you know, as a 12-year-old, he was mamish almost being nimshach. And ad kedei kach, that although the Chafetz Chaim refused to even curse Goyim, I mean, the Chafetz Chaim would never curse. I mean, people come to Chafetz Chaim and they say, this Poritz, this Polish nobleman is oppressing Yidden, just give him a curse and he'll drop dead. And the Chafetz Chaim said he doesn't curse anybody. But for some of the maskilim that he knew, he would add Shem Rishayim Yerkef. He would actually curse them. He was very, very, very anti. I'm sorry, someone wanted to say something? Or someone wanted to, yeah.
You said the Chafetz Chaim was a yosem.
The Chafetz Chaim was a yosem at a very young age, from his father. His mother remarried, and he was raised by his stepfather. And there's a whole maisa about that as well. The Chafetz Chaim actually married, so Shaila Wahalachas, the Yerushalmi actually is Mitzayda that it's Asher. The Chafetz Chaim actually married his stepsister. The Chafetz Chaim actually married the daughter of his stepfather, which the Bavli mockers, the Yerushalmi actually is mocker, but we paskin like the Bavli. And there's a whole story about why this happened. And the Chafetz Chaim said later that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him much hatzlacha in the shidduch. The stepfather was, he heard the stepfather arguing with his mother about the daughter being a good shidduch. And the stepmother felt her son could do better, so to speak, whatever it is. And the Chafetz Chaim was margish that this was causing bitter feelings and machlekes between his mother and his stepfather. So in order to keep shalom bayis for his mother, he told her he wanted the shidduch. And he said he did it totally so that his mother should have shalom bayis with his stepfather. And he tied it later that because the kavana was legamri l'shem shemayim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu blessed the shidduch in many, many ways. Very, very unusual story that the Chafetz Chaim himself said over later. So this shtickle of the Nisiv by Sinas Chinam is a yisayid that different people use. You know, if you want to be more modernish, so to speak, they often look at the Nisiv. I do want to point out, though, that although the Nisiv was Beteva, very, very gentle, and he was not one who wanted to fight, and the Nisiv was involved in what we call Zionist activity, building up Eretz Yisrael. But I do want to point out that the big supporter of Eretz Yisrael in the end of the 19th century was Baron Rothschild, of the Rothschild banking family. He lived in France, Baron Edmund Rothschild. And we have letters from the Nisiv in which the Nisiv actually asked Baron Rothschild to cut off financial funding for kibbutzim that were anti-religious. And the Nisiv actually said, so when people said to the Nisiv, but if they don't get funding, they're going to have to leave Eretz Yisrael. He says, that would be a wonderful thing. Get them out of Eretz Yisrael. He says, Eretz Yisrael doesn't need kaifrim. So even the Nisiv, with all of the kindness, the Nisiv recognized that kaifrim and apikorsim perhaps didn't have a makam, or shouldn't have a makam in Eretz Yisrael. But the word I want to share with you, go a little weiter with this, then I still have some more historical stuff, is a word from Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky. And the Medrash says the following. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Nasa Adam, let's create Adam. So, state in Medrash that Malachi Asharis were arguing whether Adam should be created. MS Chesed Aimer, Chesed said, Yivra, create the person. Shekulo Chesedim, mention have a kayach of Chesed, they help each other. MS Aimer al Yivra. MS says, don't create man. Kulo sheker. Man is full of lies. Who needs him? Sedek Aimer, righteousness, said Yivra. Because people, once again, can do mitzvahs. But it says, Shalom Aimer. Shalom said, Lo Yivra. Shekulai Katata. Man is full of machlekes. So we have two against two. It says it was a tie. MS and Shalom said, don't do it. Sedek and Chesed said, do it. Now, the Chayre, if it's a tie, HaKadosh Baruch Hu could have been the tiebreaker, but that's not what the Medrash says. The Medrash does not say HaKadosh Baruch Hu broke the tie, but it says he took MS and he threw MS to the earth. He threw MS out of the ring. He threw him down. As the Pasuk says, MS may eretz titzmach. Memela, the Medrash says, MS is out of the way. So now you have Tzedek and Chesed 4, and the only misnaget is Shalom, so it's 2 against 1. Hashem creates other. As they state in Medrash. So L'chaira, it's a big pelech. I'm wondering, Hashem simply, if it's two against two, Hashem simply throws one angel out of the ring, to kind of get rid of the opposition, like what's going on. So the Emes is, the Ketzais HaChayshin has a whole arichas on this medrash of Emes Meyeretz Titzmach, and he's masbir that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, by throwing Emes out of the ring, and by having Emes in Eretz instead of Shemayim, is changing the nature of Emes in Torah. This is the Ketzais HaChayshin based on Iran. Because you could have perceived Emes as a fixed mathematical point. For example, 1 plus 1 equals 2. If your shita is, it's 3, it's not the pshat, that's your shita. The pshat is you're wrong. There's only one fixed answer. And yet, in Torah Shebal Peh, HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't define Emes that way. The Gemara says, if you have a machlekes Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, even if we paskim like Beis Hillel, who's right objectively? So state in the Gemara, the Mishnah and Chagiga, actually, Eilu v'Eilu, Divrei, Elokim Chaim, they're both right. So the Ran says, how could they be both right? What did Hashem tell Moshe? Did Hashem tell Moshe Chayav or Pater? Did Hashem tell Moshe Kasher or Treif? Whichever one HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe, the other one is wrong. How is it Yitachain that two contradictory teachings are both right? So the Drasha Saran is Masbir, that the Emes is, the way Torah Shebal Peh works, it's not as we think, that every single halacha was directly given by Hashem to Moshe. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave Moshe Klolim and Yesedis. It is then left to the Chachamim of each generation to take those Klolim and Yesedis, whether they're the Yud Gimel Midas, whether they're other Yesedis of Drasha, and to be mighty from those Yesedis, Drashos, and Halachas. And it's Yitake that with the same Yesedis, different Mandi Amrim will come up with different applications. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, as long as one is following those Yesedis and Svaras, then whatever they come up with is in fact, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, is Emes. It's Emes because it's Miyosid from Torah. And the Ketzais HaChayshin says that is the meaning of Emes May Eretz Titzmach. HaKadosh Baruch Hu could have given the Torah, which is Lagamri Min HaShamayim. But in order to enable pilpul, in order to enable chiddush, in order to enable even machlokes, and we'll see why that's important, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as it were, said, the MS will be determined by the Chachamim utilizing the Yesedis Torah. This is the Ketzais HaChayshin. MS Meyeretz Titzmach, and it's based on Iran, because the Iran says, that is the meaning of Lo Bashamayim, that even when HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to a Chacham, you got it wrong, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is mevater by saying, you use the Kaya Chadrasha, then I'll go with you. This is an important idea. And Memela is Yitachein, the Ketzai says, based on the Drasha Saran, that even two contradictory Shitas can be Emes, because they're Miyusad. Now, of course, this is a big, important qualifier. We're not saying every idea is Emes. But those ideas of the Chachmei Hador, the Gedalei Hador, of course, those are going to be questions like, who is that? Are going to be Emes by definition. Because it being miyusad on the Tiras Hashem, that's the bechina of Emes May Eretz Titzmach. And really, it's a chavivas of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that he wanted Tira to come, not only by Hashem giving us it on a silver platter, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu telling us we become shutfim in Tira, because it's through our pilpul, our svara, our chiddush, that we bring the Torah into the world. For example, I mean, you can see this on every level. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for example, we have, when everything comes out, we have a machlekes, electricity, right? Let's say 150 years ago. Is electricity mutter on Shabbos or mutter on Yom Tov? So initially you had machlekes. Why is it mutter? Why is it asur? Even now, to the other Yom Hazeh, most Paiskim say it's Havara. The Chazon Ish says closing an electrical circuit is Baina. Right, cloning is it mutter? Every new technology. Now, l'chaira, HaKadosh Baruch Hu could have given Moshe a definite answer to every question. And even if you're going to say, well, they wouldn't have known what cloning was for Shas Matan Torah, Hashem could have given an envelope. Open up the envelope in Tafshin, whatever Tafshin Samach, and you'll see. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu bedafka left it in a way that the Torah's hashlama requires the inputs of Chachamim. And that's the Chavivas that Hashem says, that the Chacham is a chelik of Hakadosh. In fact, the Gemara says, when you learn Torah Lishma, originally, Torah is called Tiras Hashem. When you learn Torah Lishma, it's called Tiras Sai. It becomes your Torah. That one who is Zaycha, to learn Torah Lishma with the Mem Ches Devarim, Shatara Niknes, becomes a Yaitzer of Torah, a creator of Torah. See, we make a big mistake when we look at Torah Shebal Peh, like every single, you know, Psak Halacha was Nimser as a Chaluk of Torah Shebal Peh. Because Baruch Hu gave the Yesaitis. Right? This is the meaning of Emes Me Eretz Titzmach. So now, Rav Yaakov says, Rav Yaakov takes all of this, I mean, I've added a lot, but Rav Yaakov takes this basic idea and says very beautifully that what are the two tainas against Adam? One is that he's full of sheker, and the other is he's full of katata, machlekes. He says it's haba atalia, because when MS was defined as a specific revelation of Hashem, then mimeila, if I believe the MS is so-and-so and you believe the MS is not so-and-so, by definition, one of us is right and one of us is wrong. That's going to be Gerim Machlekes. But by MS getting redefined to be Makir, the possibility of Elu V'Elu Divrei Elokim Chayim, it's not that Hashem is eliminating the bad, the negative vote, but the redefinition of MS allows us to overcome Kitata as well. Because at least among the Chachamim that are Naman to the Messiah, there doesn't have to be animosity. There doesn't have to be Machlekes. Because it's not the Pshat, I'm right and you're wrong. The Pshat is there's a Bechina of Elu V'Elu Divrei Elokim Chayim. So the redefinition of Emes enables a Shalom as well. That's right. It's really a very, very nice Pshat in the Medrash that by redefining Emes to be Emes Me'eretz Titzmach, you don't have katata. Now, this is an idea. Avada, we have plenty of katata. We have plenty of sinas chidam, and we have plenty of ideas that are avada not emes. But at least in theory, the world could now exist b'shalom if one is makir the idea of emes mi'aretz titzmach. So the emes is, this is really exactly what we face when we look at these different shitas in Klal Yisrael, chasidus and misnagdim, which unfortunately we didn't get to. Od chazayin l'mayit. We haven't really talked about chasidus, and I do want to eventually, I don't know, some opportunity to talk about it. But chasidus, misnagdim, musar, yeshiva, tayrim, derech eretz. These are shitas within Klal Yisrael. These are not shitas mibachutz. And in these shitas, there's machlekes. But once again, on these types of shitas, there's vadei and elu v'elu. Divrei Elokim Chayim. Yeah.
Well, don't we say that there was machlok in Bishan and Hibbet, and that quote came and said that this is
So even then, I mean, Lamaisa, Taisus asked the Kasha, actually. Taisus asked the Kasha, L'chari, if there's a din of Loba Shemayim, how is it Shayach for a Bas Kol to even be Machriya? Right? That's a Kasha. But even so, the Bas Kol's Hachra is not referring to what is objectively true and what is not objectively true. It's referring to how you fear Zach L'maisa. L'maisa, Klal Yisrael, at least in Halacha, should follow one Derech. So Memeila should just follow Beis Hillel. And it doesn't even say because Beis Hillel is right. It's very interesting. The Gemara says that the reason the Halacha is like Beis Hillel is because they were Anavim, they were modest, and they gave covet to Divrei Beis Shammai. It doesn't say because they're right, but rather because of their midos, they were given that.
They're a rope as well.
Say again? Yeah, well, that's another kasha. Why wouldn't that have been enough? But the Gemara actually says it wouldn't have been enough because in order to follow Rav, you have to have the miyats in the same, like a Sanhedrin. For example, if you have in the world 100 chachamim and 60 of them or 70 of them pasuk in a certain way, the other is not mechuyev to follow the Rav because we're not in one meishav, we're not in one assembly. Same thing, if there's a yeshiva Beis Shammai, yeshiva Beis Hillel, and they're not in one place like a Sanhedrin, they're not mechuyev. Beis Shammai's Talmidim were permitted to follow Beis Shammai until there was a Bas Kol. In other words, Beis Shammai was not mechuyev to be mevatel their daya. So this, yeah. It's a good question, but procedurally, what happened was that for various reasons, the Sanhedrin did not always decide to be Eimed L'Minyan. It's an interesting idea that there were certain types of machleksim in Klal Yisrael where the Sanhedrin itself felt that we're not going to be machriya by a vote, even though you know what a majority holds, but we're not going to make an official vote. And if they were not Eimed Laminyan, there is no chiyav of following the Rev. Yeah.
So we're saying that there are certain situations in halachas that weren't in Yogea during the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, and then they're left for later, or AFLP, that even though Moshe Rabbeinu heard or was recalled for Kashmir Achu Aleph, but if later on we use the tools of learning how to Torah to get to Beis, then we could say Beis even though Moshe Rabbeinu
was out. Okay, so we have to be mechalik. What Moshe Rabbeinu got as a private hiskalvus from the Rebbeinu Shalom, we don't really know. And it could be he got it. Could be he got everything. He saw the future Dairus, right? He saw Rabbi Akiva. So what Moshe Rabbeinu got privately is what Moshe Rabbeinu got privately. But he was not meiser to Klal Yisrael, all that he got. So I would say this. Whatever Moshe Rabbeinu was meiser to Am Yisrael, that becomes a chelik of the Torah Shel Pe Mamish. That's called Halacha Moshe Misinai. It's not shayach for there to be a machlekes on that later. But what I'm referring to is that to the extent that Moshe was given a klal, and the Chachamim then used that klal in different ways to be mitzi different maskanis, even if Moshe Rabbeinu's own Havana, and even if the Eibishter's own Havana, was that the klal should lead to Taitzah A, and a later Chacham used it for Taitzah B, if that was not an explicit hiskalus to Moshe Rabbeinu from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then it drives emes, it's nichlal in elu v'elu divrei Elokim chayim. That's why the Rambam Taka says, the Rambam says beferish, that on the existence of a halacha l'maisha misinai, it's not shayach e'machlekes. Because our emuna is that nothing from the mesira of that Torah was really forgotten. Things that may have been forgotten were things the Chachamim learned out, and it had to be relearned. But the etzem teichen of the mesira, there was no shichicha. In other words, it was all what Hashem gave to Moshe was never forgotten and never distorted, and any shichicha only involved the application of those yisaitis to given situations. On that is shayach machlekes, on that is shayach shichicha, but on that is shayach emes meyaretz titzmach and elu v'elu divrei Elokim chayim. This is what the Rambam says. Yeah.
So that would mean that all the halachas that were darshan now, none of those were halachas.
According to this, again, the lashon is not so mashma that way, but according to the Rambam in the Hakdamat Perush Mishnayos, that's what it refers to. The shleishes halachim halachas. Yeah.
I was going to mention that.
Yeah. Yeah. So the assumption would be that those were derivatives. Those were drushas already. They were not etzem mesira.
I'm not familiar with the midrash. I don't know where Hashem showed Moshe Rabbeinu certain issues that were going to be left unclarified, and he said to him that based in that generation, in that place, will establish.
Right. I don't know if it's a midrash. I know the Marshal. The Marshal says. I don't know if it's a medrash beferish, but the Marshal says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was Marel Amaisha, Mem Tes Panim Lakan, Mem Tes Panim Lakan. Yeah. So that right. This ties into this as well, that Moshe Rabbeinu himself was aware of the multiple efsharis, and there was not a direct effect. By the way, the Gra says an interesting thing, which only the Gra could really be aimed on. The Gra says that even because of Elo Elo Divrei Elokim Chayim, even a mandiyamar that is nitche from halacha, you will always find a kiyum for that svara someplace in Torah. And you find this. In other words, you have a machlekes in a given case. One person says this svara, one person says this svara. So even if we don't paskin like this svara here, there'll be some place in Torah where that svara pops out, so to speak. That svara is going to have a kiyum in some makam. Right? That's the idea of Eilu V'Eilu Divrei Elokim Chayim, that indeed, even in behavior, it's going to be emes, but it'll have its emes in a different eifen. Now, I think I may have told you a maisa with Rav Chaim. It's a very cute maisa. The Chavis Chaim once went to consult with Rav Chaim. Rav Chaim was older. Rav Chaim was considered to be the Gadol Ador. And when he's in Brisk, Rav Chaim is davening mincha, and right after Rav Chaim davens mincha, a Baal Abbas just comes in, like sometimes the Baal just comes in, a simple guy, and says, Rebbe, how come there's so much machlekes in Gemara? Everything's machlekes. So Rav Chaim thought for around a minute and said, you're very wrong. For every machlekes in Chazal, there are many more areas where there's haskama. For example, the first Mishnah in Sukkah has a machlekes, if a sukkah is lamayla meyesra mama, is it kasher? So Masech HaSukkah begins with machlekes, what's going on? But think about it. If you're arguing about a sukkah that's lamayla meyesrim, that means there's haskama that there's a sukkah, there's haskama that it's gimel mechitzas, there's haskama that there's schach. In other words, machlekesim tend to be the tip of the iceberg. They are what most of Gemara is about. Me'ema sai kairen eshma bi'arvin. And the Gemara asks, how do we know kriya shema that you're debating? How do we know we do, you know, at night? So Rav Chaim basically said, for every machlekes in Chazal, there are like 10 haskamas in which there's no machlekes. So Rav Chaim said, there's much more haskama in Chazal than there is machlekes. So anyway, the story goes that on the way back to Radin, which was like a 5-hour train ride, the Chafetz Chaim was very quiet. But after a few hours, the Chafetz Chaim said, Rav Chaim is a guy, and he's absolutely right. So they say what happened was that Rav Chaim went through Shas in like a minute, and Rav Chaim decided, and the Chafetz Chaim took a little longer, he went through Shas, went through everything in Shas. He says, Rav Chaim is right, he's Taka a guy, you know. So it's interesting that not everything, we think everything is machlekes. Not everything is machlekes. Machlekes is what we talk about, because the haskamas are muskim. But in all of these machlekesim, there's a tremendous amount of haskama. And the other word I want to share with you is a word from Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, about sinas chinam. You know, it says after kairach v'adasai, so the pasuk says, lo siya k'kairach v'adasai, you shall not be like, or there shouldn't be like kairach and his eda. Now the Gemara in Sanhedrin says, that's actually a lav to be machzik b'machlekes, that if you fight on a personal level, you're over on this lav, not to be kakairach v'adasai. Actually, the Rambam in the Sefer HaMitzvahs, Derech Agav, says that's an asmachta. The Torah is not really prohibiting. The Torah is basically saying that I don't want there to be a destruction like kairach v'adasai anymore. It's not a lav. Okay. But Rav Chaim Shulevitz offers another pshat, which is very, very good, very interesting. He says, what is unique about the machlekes Kairach versus Moshe? He says, what's unique is that you had a machlekes where one side was completely right and one side was completely wrong. Kairach is wrong, Moshe is right. The Torah is being made, there's never going to be a machlekes again in which one side is totally right and one side is totally wrong. There will be emes in both stuff. Now you can ask me, well, what does that mean practically? What? Reform versus, you know, you can't take it literally. But Bederech HaMusser, Rav Chaim Shmulevitz is saying, he's talking about Shalom Bayis, other things. Bederech HaMusser, the pshat is, there's never really a makom where one person is totally right and one person is totally wrong. There's always going to be stadim of emes, mikan. So, when we go into Tisha B'Av, as we approach Tisha B'Av, and we're misbinding into the Averis of the Chorban, Sinas Chinam, why don't you think about the Nitziv and Rav Yaakov and Rav Chaim Shulevitz in terms of trying to understand where people come from, different people. In fact, there are Svarim that say that Shalom and Shlemus are the same Shevish, because Shlemus is the pshat when you see the whole picture. The whole picture. You see all the different studim, memela you have shalom, because when you focus on your prat and someone has a different prat, there's going to be katata. When you see the whole picture, there's not going to be shalom because you can see the studim. Right? So this is kind of almost, you could say, a mantra of these types of vinyanim. Okay, now what I wanted to finish up tonight, I wanted to talk a little bit more about Torah and Derech Eretz. And in particular, we were talking about the fact that Rav Hirsch's movement actually had different branches, even in Germany itself, and some were misnaged to Rav Hirsch. They were not misnaged to Torah Derech Eretz, they were misnaged. They felt Rav Hirsch was too much of a kanoi. Remember, Rav Hirsch had the Sheet of Ostrit, in which you're not mechaber to reform at all, and the Gemeinde believed it was proper to do so. Also in Berlin, there was a great seminary. It was yeshiva, but it was called Beis HaMedrash LeRabbanim, which was a different concept than the yeshivas in Lita. The great yeshivas in Lita, whether we call it Volozhin, Mir, Slobodka, were not in the business of producing Rabbanim. Now, of course, many people became Rabbanim. The great Rabbanim came from the yeshivas. But it was not a school that had a goal of producing people who would be rabbis. Just like yeshivas, and that's exactly the hashgafa of yeshivas today. That we're not here to produce rabbis. In fact, in the yeshivish worlds, by the time you're studying to be a rabbi, whatever that means exactly, that means you're on the way out already. It's kind of almost a yerida, right? The concept of the yeshiva was primarily a Torah lishma idea. But the Beit Medrash L'Rabbanim was very much committed to the idea that we are here to train rabbis. As a result, in Rav Hildesheimer, this is Rav Azriel Hildesheimer, in Rav Hildesheimer's seminary, they didn't only learn Gemara and Shulchan Aruch, but they learned things that would be helpful in being a spiritual leader. I don't know if they had a direct course in public speaking that I'd get introduced later, but they learned a lot of history, secular courses. I mean, some of them were taught by from people, some were not taught by from people. Counseling, you know, how to counsel. I asked you some of what you're doing in Orla Gola, just kind of that idea as well. But in particular, it was very controversial because 19th century Germany not only had a reform movement, but also other things were coming in, some of which from the Protestants, and that is Bible criticism. You may have heard of, well, not that you have to have heard of him, you may have heard of a fellow called Wellhausen, who was a German Protestant Bible scholar, who advanced the idea that not only was Torah not min ha-shamayim, but the Torah was written by different people at different times. And what are his rayas? You see, his rayas are shtus v'hevel, but his rayas are because we find different styles in different books of the Chumash. In some books of the Chumash, the Shem HaMefarish is used more often, and in some books, Elohim is used more often, and there are contradictions in Stiris and Emela. He's mochiach from all of this, that there are multiple authorships. So, for example, in Sefer Vayikra, Kohanim are emphasized, and in Sefer Devarim, Kohanim are de-emphasized, and that's because Sefer Devarim was written after the Churban, when all these different things. Now, Fishtetzach, to be Miyashiv Stiris, that's what Chazal do. I mean, that's bread and butter of Midrashim, of Chazal, of Meforshim. And to say that just because there are different styles, that means anything, it's just Vehevel. But nevertheless, Wellhausen's constructs became enormously influential. And although, I mean, in case you're up to this, I'm very mocker that Wellhausen is old-fashioned and there are newer versions of this, but various versions of what's called the documentary hypothesis, that all of Tanakh are different documents, did become the mainstream of academic scholarship. And in Rav Hildesheimer's seminary, it was felt that they needed to be exposed to these ideas and to know how to deal with them, etc., how to address them. Da mashatash of Epicurus. And Rav Hirsch was absolutely misnagate to it. Rav Hirsch was totally misnagate to looking at biblical criticism, to studying it. He felt it was kefira. It was a denial of Torah min ha-shamayim, and he felt that it would be mazik much more so. And indeed, in the Hildesheimer Seminary, which did produce some interesting rabbanim and some chashuv rabbanim as well, some of the teachers of Bible were not even so frum. Some of them were frum, but Rav Hirsch considered them to be apikorsim anyway, because they, right? So people make a mistake when they look at Rav Hirsch as kind of the great liberal. Rav Hirsch was not liberal in that sense. Rav Hirsch was liberal in that he encouraged people to have jobs and have secular education in some ways, but he was not liberal in hashkafa. In other words, any hashkafas that were undermining the union of Torah and Shemayim, he was a great misnagate, and he was against Rabbanim being exposed to this. So this was a big machlekes between the Hildesheimer group in Berlin and Rav Hirsch. Now, the Hildesheimer yeshiva did last until the Holocaust, until the 1940s. In fact, it's very interesting. One of the very interesting Dinei Torah is who had the ownership of the Svarim of the Hildesheimer library after the Shaya, after the Churban of Europe. Because what happened basically was the Nazis were going to destroy the whole thing. And there was a yachid, an individual teacher in the seminary who managed to get all the Svarim out. And after the war, the yeshiva or whatever survived it, wanted the Svarim back, but he claimed that this is Zuto Shel Yam. There's a din in the Gemara that if property is about to be destroyed and I'm matzil the property from a river or from a fire, I'm zeiche in that property because the Bailam are miyayish. The Bailam are miyayish. So there was actually a whole din Torah, and also went to secular courts because the problem was it wasn't so much they weren't fighting over who gets the Chidushi HaRashba, because Baruch Hashem, there are plenty of Rashbas you can get, but those Svarim were very valuable, meaning to say there were manuscripts, there were, in other words, it was really a matter of money. You could sell them for a few million dollars, and the question is, who gets the million dollars? And this went to litigation. There is a Ramah that says there's no Yish by Svarim. It's interestingly enough. So this went to a whole deal. But be it as it may, Rav Hirsch was very misnagged to the Hildesheimer Seminary. He also felt it wasn't the tzura of a yeshiva, because the tzura of a yeshiva has to be Torah Lishma, and not Torah specifically to produce professionals. And he felt that it wasn't, as well as many of the Gedolim of Eastern Europe, Kal Vachomer, he felt that the amount of learning was not commensurate with what a Rav needed, because there was so much other stuff that was going around. Now, let me just mention, though, that this is called Beis Medrash L'Rabbanim. The Hildesheimer Seminary did have some interesting people who were the heads of it. And the heads, at different times, were regarded as Gedolim, even by the other part, even by Poland and Lita. The first head of it was that Rav Hildesheimer appointed. Rav Hildesheimer was not the Rosh Yeshiva per se, but he was the Miyazid, was Rav David Zvi Hoffman. Now, Rav David Zvi Hoffman, again, these are Gedolim that maybe you didn't hear about so much. Let me just say a little bit about him. Rav David Zvi Hoffman was actually born in Hungary, but Rav David Zvi Hoffman was considered to be the biggest Paisek in Germany after Rav Hirsch was Nifter. And Rav David Zvi Hoffman was also an expert in Bible criticism. And Rav David Zvi Hoffman was the one who tried to be miyashiv all of the tainus of biblical criticism al pi the Masorah. And in fact, he wrote a perish on the Chumash in German, which was been translated in Hebrew, which is Benimsa, and you can get. And it's considered to be, for those who delve into this particular area, it's considered to be very, very yesidistic. Story has it, as a young man, he applied to teach in Rav Hirsch's yeshiva, and he was not accepted. You know, whatever, who knows if these are stories, but maybe because Rav Hirsch already saw he had an atiya towards academic research. But Rav David Zvi Hoffman was the mechaber of the Tshuvas Melamed Lahayil, which is a sefer of psak that is used today. I mean, Paiskim use the Melamed Lahayil. He was considered a very, very chashuv paisik. Rav David Zvi Hoffman died in the beginning of the 20th century, and he was succeeded by a very unusual man, Rav Avram Eliyahu Kaplan, at the age of 30, and Rav Kaplan died at the age of 33, died very, very young. And one thing about Rav Avram Eliyahu Kaplan, almost not known today, but he was in Slobodka, he was from Slobodka, in the time of Rav Yaakov. In other words, he was Rav Yaakov, Rav Aaron, Rav Futner, he was their chaver. He was, right, he died young, but he was their chaver. And people were nishtaimen, everyone felt, had he lived, he would have been the Gadol Hador. He was very creative. He had all sorts of plans to really revive the whole ruach of the yeshiva with Musar and with Hasidus and with Hislavus. And he took the challenge of going to Berlin precisely because he wanted to bring the yeshiva shederach of learning into the German spirit. And that's why he took the job. He took the job precisely because he was a person who wanted to make a mapecha. And he brought, he was the head of that yeshiva for only 2 years. They died. But he brought Rashi Yeshiva from Europe, from Poland and Lithuania, to give shiurim there, to introduce the German Bachrim to this. This is how, this kind of bringing people was how people like Rav Schwab then went to Meir, because the Rosh Yeshivas had come to Germany introducing, although Rav Schwab was never a Talmud in the Hildesheimer Seminary. Rav Kaplan felt, and this is all controversial, he was a very creative and wide-ranging person, he felt that there was something the Torah world could also learn from the more academic side. He felt there could be a hischabras. that we have the pilpul and the ian of Shas and Paiskim that we had from Bavlojin and Slobodka and Mir, but he felt that the knowledge of history and etymology and language could also help you understand Chazal better. And he tried to create a mizuk, ad kedei kach, that he had a tachnit, he had a plan to write a new perish on Shas based on these yesaitis. And he did it, he wrote a big hakdama, like 50 pages, and he did like a few blad in brachas. And Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky was mayed that had he been matzliach, it would have made a revolution bigger than Rav Chaim's revolution in terms of the Derech HaLimud and the like. But he was a person of tremendous hergish. He wrote poems, you know, private poems. He was very close to the Alter. The Alter of Slobodka loved him tremendously. And one could imagine the Aveda to the world of Torah. But he was the second Rosh Hashiva of the Beis Medrash L'Rabbanim. Now, the third person is a fascinating person who was zeicha to live quite long. He was nifter in the 60s. And this is Rabbi Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg, who is known as the Sri Nayesh. And this is also quite a very interesting person, interesting story. A person who was a gadol, but a person who was torn between two worlds, because he had strong kesharim to the German world of scholarship, and he had strong kesharim to the Alter of Slobodka and to Slobodka. Ad kedei kach, that at his levaya in the 1960s, this is a Peledic story, he was going to be buried initially in Har HaMenuchot, not Har HaMenuchot, in Sanhedria, right here, next to Rav Meir Bar Ilan, next to the Zionist thing. And Rav Yecheskel Sarner, the Rosh Yeshiva of Chevron, brought his Talmidim from Chevron to block the burial. And he says, we're taking him to Har HaMenuchos, he's going to be buried with our people, the Slobodka Talmidim. And the funeral itself, they mamish disrupted the funeral, and they changed where he was going to be buried. I mentioned this to Rav Weinbach the other day. He says he remembers it. He says he was at the Sri Nayesh was nifter in the early 60s. He says he remembers the Levaya. It was a big deal. Rav Yecheskel Sarner, who had been a chaver of Rav Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg, was a big takif, and he says, no, Rav Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg is going to be with Gedolim, and we're going to take him over to that side. Did you want to say something?
Yeah, I was really Catholic.
You know, I don't know. I think it was like a cerebral hemorrhage, kind of an aneurysm, something like that. He died very, very young. He did have children, and there are Einiklach from Rav Kaplan still alive. But I see now that there are people that are looking at his writings, looking at his Musser, looking at, because his main idea was like this. You have to understand what was going on. Besides the fact that he was a tremendous Eloi and a tremendous intellect, he was a person of deep feeling, and he saw that what was happening is people were losing, in all sides, in Germany, in Poland, they were losing hislavus for Limud HaTorah. They were losing geschmack. The Haskalah was overpowering, the reform was overpowering, communism, whatever it was. And his whole idea was to bring back a certain geschmack and hislavus, and to understand that even from the Chachmas Chitzainius, you can get Havanas in Torah, and to bring it all together. He was an attempt to integrate and bring things together. Maybe he was a man before his time. Freshbrochel took him early, so to speak, because his plan was what the world couldn't be civil. It's sometimes shayach, such a thing. But this was his inyan. He bedafka wanted to go to Germany because he wanted to take the Eish HaTorah and bring it to Germany, but also incorporate from Germany, which he could then bring back to Slobodka. Now, his successor was very much the same. This is Rav Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg. Again, he's known for the Sri Nayesh. Rav Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg, also, they say that he would have been, the Alter held, he would have been the Gadol Ador, you know, with Rav Aaron and like. He certainly was one of the Gadol Ador. He had in many ways a tragic life. He was married at a young age, and there was a divorce. He was divorced, and he never remarried again. It was a forced shidduch, whatever it is. The Alter of Slobodka was afraid he would be nimshach to haskalah, so he arranged a quickie marriage with the daughter of a rav of a shtetl, with the idea that Rav Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg would become the rav of a shtetl. The problem was that there was no compatibility in the shidduch, and Rav Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg was a person who was involved in different types of chachmas and whatever it is, and it had a big effect. But he did become the head of the Hildesheimer Seminary. He wrote different svarim and studies. They got published in the Sri Deish, which is a great one to consider to be a Paisek. And it's interesting that he was very close to the Alter of Slobodka, he was very close to the Musar, but he also incorporated what you would call the German scholarship. During the Holocaust itself, he was in the Warsaw Ghetto. He was actually stuck in Poland, and he was the head of the Rabbanim of the Warsaw Ghetto. And there are stories about his Mesiras Nefesh and helping Yidden. That, you know, you can't imagine the Warsaw Ghetto. You're walking and people are just dropping dead of starvation and the like. And, you know, he would help people and get, you know, there are stories about he knocked on doors or demanded that people carry money to buy food or whatever it would be. After the war, he was very, very tzibrachet. Emotionally, he was all alone. He was not married. And he was offered many positions. He was offered many positions in Eretz Yisrael, in Chutz La'aretz. He felt he really could not take a position because he felt there was so much machlekes in Am Yisrael that they just wouldn't understand where he was coming from, where he was trying to be mechaber these different worlds. In fact, he wrote some letters that were private letters. They were published later. It's a whole machlekes, as it was at Lashon Hara, to publish them. But in the letters, he talks particularly about Eretz Yisrael, that he wants to come to Eretz Yisrael, but he says the machlekes here is so much that he feels he wouldn't have a makom. So he went to Switzerland. He went to a small village in Switzerland. He had Talmidim there. And he spent 20 years in Switzerland. He wrote a little bit. He lost his whole library, which was a tragedy for himself as well. And he was considered to be indeed a gadol, but a gadol who did not have a position, so to speak. And he was nifter in the 60s. So he was considered to be also a figure who tried to combine. Now, you have to know there were other figures too who kind of tried to combine what's called East and West. Rav Soloveitchik, Rav Yoshe Ber Soloveitchik, was not in the Hildesheimer Seminary, but he was University of Berlin. Rav Huttner fooled around a little bit there. The Bavitcher Rebbe was a Sorbonne, but things like that. And then you have people who went Chutz L'machina. You have Abraham Joshua Heschel, who came from a Frum Chassidish family and went to Berlin and became very dominant in the conservative movement, right? So people went in different directions. But the whole period between the two wars was a period in which many creative people were looking at different aspects. Some of them incorporated them into their Yiddishkeit, and some of them left Yiddishkeit to one level or another by that exposure. So it's similar, maybe Lahavdil, to the Arba Nichnasu L'Pardes, right? People try to enter the Garden of Kabbalah, right? So for some people, they're Nichshal. Other people, Rabbi Akiva is Nichnas B'Shalom, V'Yatza B'Shalom. So there are great sakanas here, but there was also a great potential. So these are all the different types of things. So it's a complicated life between the wars. It was a very, very complicated situation. But as I say, Rav Hirsch himself, who died in the 1880s, Rav Hirsch was a misnaget to the whole Hildesheimer approach. It's interesting, in other words, that Rav Hirsch actually had a shita that you want to keep Torah and Derech Eretz separate. In other words, yeah, have a secular education, but don't take the secular ideas and use them to be Mefarish Torah. You have Derech Eretz, you have Torah, you have Limudei Kodesh, you have Limudei Chol, but don't be Ma'arvev the Techumen. What Hildesheimer was doing was to be Ma'arvev the Techumen, that Rev Kaplan and Rev Weinberg felt had a potential. Others felt that it's Yotza Secharei Behefseidei in the Yerbuvia itself. Right. So this is an interesting shita. Even now, today, you know, we have Torah Umada. I mean, Norman Lamb says this, actually. Norman Lamb says, why use motto is Torah Umada? Rav Hirsch's motto was Torah Im Derech Eretz. So Norman Lamb says, Gufa, that the nafkamina between Torah Umada versus Torah Im Derech Eretz is Torah Umada wants synthesis and chibur, in which you use the chol to be megala on the kodesh. Like you'll use Shakespeare to understand a medrash, something like that. He says, Rav Hirsch was misnagid. Rav Hirsch says there's the tuchum of Derech Eretz, a tuchum of Torah, but you're not ma'arvev the tuchumim. Right? So really, why you is the ideological descendants of perhaps the Hildesheimer Seminary more than it is the descendant of Rev Hirsch in Torah and Derech Eretz, right? So it's interesting that these things are connected in that way. Yeah.
According to that shit, is it true both ways? You can't take Torah to the other way either?
The other way Yuvade do. In fact, Refersh's whole point is you have to take the Avada Refersh was saying you have to take the Yesaitis of Torah and bring them into Derech Eretz in the sense of the way you conduct your business, the way you know, in other words, all those things have to be al pi the halachas,
understanding wise as well.
Refersh very much felt that Torah was the prism, the lens through which you understand all of life. That Vada was the case. But he did not agree that Derech Eretz is Megala on Torah. He only believed that Torah is Megala on Derech Eretz. The other Shita felt there's type of Giluyim that you can have. Right? So, again, these are different issues. Now, let me just say a little bit about Eretz Yisrael. I mean, this, again, deserves much more time than we have, but I'll spend 5 minutes on it. At some point, Rav Hildesheimer, when he was still alive, wanted to move the Beis Medrash L'Rabbanim to Eretz Yisrael, or at least have a branch in Eretz Yisrael. Remember, Slobodka had come to Eretz Yisrael, that was Chevron, although they were still in Europe as well. And we have a whole bunch of letters. Now, this was like in the 1920s. We have a whole bunch of letters, Rav Chaim Eiser, who was considered to be the Gadol Hador, writing to the Hildesheimer children who were already in charge that please, no, what you have is a good thing for Germany, etc., but please do not bring it to Eretz Yisrael because it will be Eiker, the whole Tzura of Limud HaTorah here. So there was a great, great hisnagdus to have any of those types of institutions in Eretz Yisrael. And to this very day, as you know, B'derech Klal, the Shita in Eretz Yisrael, of course, later it was reaffirmed by the Chazon Ish and the Briska Rav, and then Rav Shach, was very much against the idea of combining a tziruf of Limudei Chol. Right now, and again, in the Dati Lumi community, things are a little bit different, but in the, what you call the Haredi, the Yeshivisha community, there still is that isnagdus. And Rav Chaim Eiser said, what is okay in Germany, it's a shame that it wouldn't be so great to have in Vilna, or whatever, Kal v'chaymer, one should not be mechallel Eretz Yisrael. And this comes ad kedei kach, that even if you have a school that wants to offer, again, I don't want to take sides on contemporary delicate political issues, but you know, one of the problems some American Olim face, is they want their kids to have a high school education. High school education, not college, high school education. You know, it's very hard for an American, and maybe you've already gone beyond this question, but for the average American, it's very hard to say, gee, my kid is only going to have, you know, 5 years of secular education. How is it shayach, right? How is it shayach? So they want to have schools that have high school education, which in Israel is called bagrut. But within the Haredish community, that's a trade thing. What do you mean by grit? You learn how to read, whatever it is, which you'll know anyway in Israel, you know, and learn a little arithmetic, and then you learn Torah. What do you need by grit? Etc. So some schools are trying to kind of appeal, be within the miskeret of a Haredi school, Hashkafa, but still have by grit. They can't do it in Yerushalayim. In Yerushalayim, there's a Masera, you don't have mixed schools. So if you have a school like Rappaport, there are different things like that, it has to be outside. There may be Ramat Beit Shemesh, other places like that. But in Yerushalayim, there's a very strong Messiah that you don't have schools that are in Ibuvia. I mean, we have public schools, but I'm talking about within the Torah world, you don't have schools that have that Ibuvia. So you'll often see. So Rappaport, which is a perfectly fine school, but you'll see when they wanted to open up a branch in Ramot, there were all sorts of the Toshvei HaShchuna, went to Gedolim, and Gedolim issued letters that they cannot open up in Ramot. They have to go Chutz the Yerushalayim. And that really is the Messiah, that Yerushalayim has a tradition of being Al Tiras HaKadosh, and not, this is not even the Erbuvia. Remember, this is not even the Erbuvia of Berlin, in which the Chayel is Megala on the Torah. This is just having Torah Derech Eretz. But there's a strong hisnagdus to that, yeah.
You mentioned earlier that Shivot, the taught the Shem Shemayim. So just learn the Shem Shemayim. But
yeah.
Especially lots of Bali colonies, but they teach Rabbanot.
No, actually, you're right. You know, and I feel bad that.
I heard couple of the Chashuk Sephardi rabbis say that most of someone's learning after a few years should be
Kol Shulchan Aruch. Yeah. The truth is, I am what I can be accused of being Ashkenazic centric, and you know you are correct. Most of us are, unfortunately, but you are correct. I mean, one can give a whole bunch of shiurim, and it would be kedai to look at what went on in the Sephardic world. The Sephardic world was very, very different in many ways. First of all, the concept of getting parnasa was not unusual. That was a common idea. And among Sephardim went back to the old psak of the Rambam, where the Rambam says that even if you're a Talmud Chacham, your parnasa should be from work. And the many Sephardish Rabbanim were tailors or storekeepers or whatever it would be. Also, there was a much greater emphasis on halacha l'maisa and on being mishamish. And in Teiman, now I know Teimanim are not Sephardim necessarily, but Teimanim, the standard chinuch, every kid learns safras, mila, and shechita. In other words, the education was a very practical l'maisa dika education of skills. Now, our Masaira is from Rav Chaim Volozhiner, who emphasized the notion of Torah l'shma, that you learn Torah even if it's not nogeya l'maisa. But you're right, Sephardim had a different Masaira. Now, Rav Avadja, one of his big complaints is that Sephardim have become corrupted by the Ashkenazic model of a yeshiva. So now Sephardim are doing the same thing as Ashkenazim. And he says it's a big betrayal of those Makairis. In fact, what is Ravadja is a little mocking. Ravadja says, if you want to learn Yerideya in Panovich, you got to hide in a basement room where nobody sees you. Because if they see you learning Halacha L'maisa, that's a bizayon. Right, so you are correct. Sephardim have a very different Masaira. I've been describing the Ashkenazic. Now, on the other hand, Sephardim, keep in mind, didn't have the problem of the integration of secular academic studies and Torah, because that wasn't their thing. I mean, the Sephardim didn't have a Haskalah, so keep in mind, they didn't have a Haskalah, they didn't have a reform movement, right? They didn't have, because who wants to be like the Arabs, right? I mean, there's no, you know, they didn't have all of these pushes. So yeah, they worked, but their work was not lawyers, doctors, and accountants, or college professors. Their work was like blue-collar work, essentially, we would call it. So a lot of the reasons for the yeshiva movement as a response to Haskalah, Pashit, didn't exist. And even today, even if there are Sephardim who are not totally Shomer Mitzvahs, but you find a certain Tamimas, you know, they have a Munas Chachamim, even if it's superstition sometimes, they have a certain, you know, they'll be Mispalo, you know, they'll go to Kvarim of Tzadikim. There's a certain simplicity in their Emuna that doesn't have all the intellectual problems and sveikas that Ashkenazim have, right? Ashkenazim have all of these shilas of emuna, and Sephardim, again, I'm not saying everybody, but Sephardim typically don't have those same type of questions. So maybe at some point, I don't know if I'm qualified, maybe we'll get Rav Peretz or somebody to give us the overview of Sephardim. But Ravadja does taina that you can't even get Sephardic culture anymore because it's all been adulterated by Ashkenazim. He even gives one specific example, even by girls. He gives a very interesting example. You know, it's a machlekes, the Mechaber and the Ramah. If women, based on the Rambam and Rabbeinu Tam, whether women who do a mitzvah saseh shazman grama, that they're pater from, sukumu, do they make a bracha? Rabbeinu Tam shita is that even though they're not mitzvah v'yaisa, they still make a bracha. Because Asher Kiddushanu B'mitzvaysev is going on Klal Yisrael. The Rambam Paskins, they don't make a bracha, because how can they say Asher Kiddushanu? And if they make a bracha, it's a bracha of Atala. The Shulchan Aruch Paskins like the Rambam, as he usually does, and the Ramah Paskins like Rabbeinu Tam. So among Ashkenazic women, they make a bracha on a sukkah, they make a bracha on a lulav, they make a bracha on a shayfer. Now, given the fact that until recently, and even today, most Sephardic from girls learn in Ashkenazic Beis Yaakovs, or at least predominantly Ashkenazic Beis Yaakovs, they're all taught to make a bracha. Rav Avadja is shreklich upset about that. He says, all of these Sephardic women are making brachas levatala, and you have to be machzer atara liyeshna, that's his motto, and Mimela, we have to teach them the dafka, not to make a bracha. Of course, Rav Avadya goes one step further, which this part will never get. Rav Avadya actually telling us that even Ashkenazim in Eretz Yisrael are mechuyev to follow the Beis Yosef and not the Rambam, because says the Beis Yosef is the Mara Diasra of Eretz Yisrael, and Ashkenazim are mechuyev to give up their minhagim. So not only does he taina that Svardim shouldn't follow Ashkenazim, he taina Ashkenazim shouldn't be Ashkenazim in Eretz Yisrael. Everybody should be Svardi, or at least follow the Hachra of the Beis Yosef, because he was the Mara Diasra. He was here before the Talmidei Hagra, right? The whole Ashkenazic minhag is basically Talmidei Hagra. Well, they showed up, they're Johnny come latelys. They showed up in the middle of the 1800s. When they came, they were only Svardim, basically. So his time is Midinei Minhag. The Talmidei Hagra were Mechuyev to be Mishana their minhagim. All right, he's not going to win on that one, but this is his sheet about that, yeah.
Was there a Robbins in Montreal? Said the opposite way. It was tiny that Svardim in America or in Montreal, where the Ashkenazi communities have almost an obligation to use that stuff.
Okay, so.
I told them, but now established communities.
Yeah.
So he says, Kamakalabat. I said, Chotzevineo.
Chotzevineo. That might be. That's what you're saying.
With the Svardim, you know, it doesn't mean it's back.
So maybe that's the deal we'll make with Rav Avadya. We'll all become Svardim here if all the Svardim become Ashkenazim in America.
Maybe a deal.
The what? They said what?
I've been told the same thing.
What did they tell you?
They said over here it's an Ashkenazi community. The Svardim have to follow this community. You can't do it.
Oh, because now Ashkenazim are the right, you mean?
Yeah.
You said the same thing.
He said the same thing. Well, yeah. Says everyone in, you know?
Yeah. Okay. You're right.
They said any Svardim that gets up there, they do it with the Svardim Abar. But the whole body said something like this, everybody laughs.
No, well, yeah. You're right. Anyway, Rav Avadya, as everyone knows, is a tremendous guy, and one can never be mezalzel in anything that he says. But as I say, some positions were not makubal by others. He was very close. You know, he was a dayan on the Rabbanut based on the same time Rav Yashiv was a dayan, and they were very, I don't know if they talk to each other now, but they were very, very close. They used to go to each other's house, Motzei Shabbos, different to go over the hard cases that they had. And so people don't realize, you know, Rav Yashiv had friends, right? They were friends. I mean, they would learn together. They would go over Shilas together. So. This was in the 60s and 70s. Yeah, they worked together as dayanim on the Beis Tamid Gadol, and they would go to each other's houses every other Motzei Shabbos.
Huh?
Was
the
first
rabbi?
Who was that? Rav Orbach was not. Rav Orbach was never a dayan. Rav Orbach was Rosh Yeshiva. See, Rav Yashiv and Rav Avadya were not Rosh Yeshiva, so they were dayanim. Rav Shlomo Zalman, he was close to everybody. He was close to Rav Yashiv, certainly, but Rav Shlomo Zalman was never a dayan. They asked him to be, but he didn't want to.
He was close to Rav Avadya also.
Probably so. I mean, listen, when you're in the Gedolim Club, I'll give you a trivial example. It says presidents of the United States are all friends with each other, even though the mice are different parties. Because, you know, there's a very small presidents club. How many, United States presidents? So Bush is like friendly with Clinton. You know, they're all friends because they went through something that other people, haven't gone through. Well, the Havdil, when you're in the Gedolim Club, Gedolim tend to have a shaykhus to each other because, they're holding at levels of Torah learning that's like beyond our levels and whatever. So you'll find Rav Avadya, you'll find that Gedolim have a yedidus for each other that sometimes is not reflected at the lower madrigas. Okay. Anyway, much hatzlachen. We should be zeichet to a binyan beis hamikdash b'meiru v'yameinu.